There was a little boy who just came home from Sunday school, and his mother said, how was Sunday school? What did the teacher talk about today? And the little boy said, she talked about two preachers who saw a man in a ditch, but neither one went over to him because he had already been robbed. Priests and preachers are not doing well in this gospel tonight. story of the Good Samaritan, which we have heard, I'm sure you have heard it many times over, and along with the prodigal son, it is one of the two most wonderful, memorable stories in all of religious and secular literature. So I'd like to we usually get this version of it, the three C's. There, the one priest who's walking by looks at the man who is in the ditch, and the priest is probably very competent. He's busy. He's got responsibilities at the temple, and he just doesn't have time to stop. But he's competent and capable, and so he goes on. He's got his duty. And then the Levite, he's also a very important person, leader in the community, and he looks at the poor man in the ditch, and his heart really goes out to the man. But he too is busy, and he's does not have time to stop and get involved in this. God only knows what happens if you stop and help out. You can be sued and all of that. And then the third one may have competence. I'm sure he does, because he seems very aware of everything and takes care of all the details. And he's certainly compassionate, because he sees the man, he goes over to him, and he pours oil and then wine into the wounds and cares for them, bandages him, puts him on his own mount, brings him to an inn, takes care of him, spends time with him, and then he's busy, he has to go on, but he makes sure that the man is taken care of in the inn, and then if there are further expenses, he'll take care of those too. So he has competence, compassion, but he has the key thing, commitment. He not only, his heart doesn't just go out but he also takes action. Your heart can be breaking for someone, and you can be very professional, but if you don't do anything about it, then what difference does it make? So that's what we hear. We usually, the focus is on the Good Samaritan and how we have to be Good Samaritans. Everybody is our neighbor, and the Samaritan is this stranger, and all of that. But ode to Father William Bausch, a great preacher in New Jersey. He had a different way of looking at this parable, and he said, if you remember that the people that are listening to this for the first time when Jesus is speaking it, they are Jews, would they identify with the priest? I don't think so. Because he's part of the establishment, and the ordinary Jew really felt put upon, even by the priests in the temple, and the Levites as well. They're a special class by themselves. So we might look at them as IRS employees today, something like that. And in any case, and the Samaritan, he's a stranger, he's not only a stranger, but even worse than the pagans, because he's worshiping, he should know better, but he's got, his religion is all mixed up with paganism and some parts of our religion. In any case, Father Bausch says, the Jews that were listening to this, who would they have identified with? With whom would they have identified? Would have been the man in the ditch, put upon. Because they as a whole people were in that situation. They often had nowhere else to turn. There were over 12,000 bandits that roamed around Jerusalem at the time, and if you tried to go from Jerusalem down to Jericho, you would run into a lot of trouble unless you had an army with you. So this was not a rare experience for them. So they would have said, "I'm the guy in the ditch." And if you look at this parable then from the ditch, it looks a little different. And one thing that might be helpful is what Charles Dickens did with this parable. He told a great story called Great Expectations, and David Lean turned it into a wonderful movie, 1946. It won a couple of Oscars for cinematography especially. It's a wonderful movie, and when I was thinking about this week, I decided to watch it again because I had seen it a long time ago, and it's even better now. And I highly recommend it. Great Expectations. The one from 1946, David Lean, the director. Anything he directed is magical. And in any case, it's about a little boy who's an orphan, Pip, and Pip's parents have died, and he's in the cemetery visiting their grave, and all of nature seems to be conspiring against him. And then out of the darkness, this brutal figure who had escaped from prison, a bandit, comes and grabs him, and he's got shackles on, and he tells the little boy, "I've got a friend that is 10 times worse than I am. And if you don't do as I tell you, he's going to creep into your house. He'll go right into your room and pull you out of your bed, and he will rip your heart and your liver out, and he will cut them up and cook them and eat them. And so you'd better do what I tell you." This little boy is scared out of his wits. So this convict says, "I want two things. I want food and I want a file so I can get rid of these shackles." So the little boy goes home. He doesn't tell anybody. He lives with a sister who is horrible to him. She's beating him and all of that. But his brother-in-law is very kind. In any case, he sneaks out in the morning. He steals a pie from the kitchen and he gets a file and he runs out to the bandit and gives it to him and helps this bandit escape and sees the bandit running through the fields. The bandit is arrested, and I'm going to ruin the movie for you completely, but he sees him taken off, and that's the last he hears about him. But little Pip is this poor orphan who, at the age of 14, he's told that he's going to apprentice to a blacksmith, his brother-in-law. So his life is going to be one of drudgery. He's does not have great expectations at that point in his life. But when he turns 20, he has been, just before this, he's been visiting for years with a very strange woman who lives in a mansion. She's the richest person around, but she has not come out of the house. She has not seen the sun in years, Mrs. Havisham. And she has invited him to come in because she has a little girl that is with her, Estella, and she wants them to play games and all of that. So he does this, and then at the age of 20, all of a sudden, he is told that he has an anonymous secret benefactor who wishes to remain anonymous, but has given him a great sum of money so that he can go to London and he can become a gentleman, get educated and refined and all of that. So that all happens to him. He becomes a gentleman. In fact, he becomes even a little snobbish and looks at the lower class, and even his good brother-in-law and his looks at them, as they're not part of his world anymore. And so his life, he's become quite wealthy, and he's partying, and he's no longer just down in the ditch. And then one day, he is visited by this man comes breaking into his apartment, and he's huge and dark, and he is like this figure that he met in the cemetery. And all of a sudden, he tells Pip that he is the bandit who had broken out of prison, and that he helped those many years ago. And more than that, he was shipped off to Australia, got out of prison, became quite wealthy, and more than that, he is his anonymous benefactor, and he wanted to disclose that now. So you would think that Pip would embrace him, but he is ugly and unclean and all of that. So Pip stays away from him, and then begins to realize that all of the good things that have happened to him, which have come, he thought, from Mrs. Havisham, and she was more than willing to let him think that, they all came through the generosity of this man that he knows very little about, except that one incident way back when he was a little kid. And the gentleman is recaptured, is in prison, and is on his deathbed, and when he's dying, Pip is right there next to him and embraces him and begins to realize that this person that he thought was his enemy, who was not even of his class anymore, this is the one that made everything possible for him. And this man loved him, grew to see him as a son, and was in a way living his life through him. And that's as far as I want to go with that movie, but it's a very different way. Sorry. You'll have to see the ending yourself. But it's a very different way of looking at the Good Samaritan, because from the perspective of the person in the ditch, someone has come in out of nowhere and rescued him and transformed his life and allowed it to be something that he never could have expected. It's a great expectation that is visited upon him from this most unexpected creature, this man that was only in his life for just a few moments. And it's a lot like the way in which every single one of us is in a ditch at some point in our lives, and maybe as a whole we're stuck in a ditch, and there's a wounded hand, scarred, that reaches out to us and pours wine and oil into the wounds of our lives and our sins, and pulls us out of the ditch when we had no expectation at all of that. I'd like to just end with another little story. It's just a little boy, again, was sitting in school, and something happened to him. He's in the third grade. He's 9 years old. Something happened to him that had never happened before. He wet his pants, and he's sitting there and very nervous. He knows that some of the boys around him are beginning to notice, and that he will never hear the end of this. And then the enemy, the little girls in the class, if they find out about it, they will treat him with disdain for the rest of his career. So he bows his head and he says, "Dear Lord, this is an emergency. I need your help as never before. Please help me." And he opens his eyes, and the teacher has noticed too, and she begins walking towards him, and he doesn't know what to do. And then when she gets very close, Susie, little girl, picks up a bowl full of a fish bowl full of water, and she walks over, and as she gets close to him, the teacher moves out of the way a little bit, but her hip bumps into the little girl, and then the little girl spills the entire contents of the fish bowl, all the water, all over poor little Johnny. And he pretends to be furious, but this is out of nowhere his salvation. And the teacher says, "Oh, go down to the gym and change into your shorts and come back to the class." So at the end of school, while they're waiting for the bus, he goes over to little Susie, who's standing there, and he says, "Did you do that on purpose?" And she says, "I wet my pants once." So, She's an unlikely good Samaritan, but there you have it. We all need that. And I'd like to end on this note. There's been a trial in Florida that has been the focus of a lot of attention for many months now, and I keep asking, why do they keep showing this trial? It's like that Jodi Arias. Why do they focus so much on this? But I think it has to do with something that is a part of our culture and our society, that we do look at people by appearances, and we make judgments about them. I guess Father Eric Andrews, on his Facebook or Twitter, he said, God's response to the verdict was the Good Samaritan, that we are all neighbors. And I think if we can move as a society, certainly as a people of God, to recognize that we are all neighbors, that we all are brothers and sisters, children of a good God, then we will be able to recognize the Good Samaritan much more easily than we do these days. So that's it. Listen.